Preacher woke up early the next morning, as usual. As he stepped outside of his tent to stretch, he looked toward the river and saw that the fancy striped tent wasn't there anymore. It had been taken down and packed up. Movement caught Preacher's eye, and when he glanced up at the hills, he saw a line of riders moving along the nearest slope, trailed by a group of pack horses and mules. Despite the early hour, the Carlin expedition was already on the move.
Good riddance. But I hope things work out for him, for Rip's sake anyway.
All over the encampment, it was the same story. Trappers moving out, some on foot, some on horseback, most of them trailing pack animals. Some of them took squaws with them too, summer wives. Most of the buckskinners had winter wives as well, and not necessarily the same woman who spent the summers with them. The arrangements were casual and produced nothing lasting except maybe a passel of half-breed kids. Preacher brewed some coffee and ate a stale biscuit for breakfast, then took down his tent and got the rest of his gear stowed away on the pack horse. He saddled up horse and paused for a last look around the valley. He wouldn't be taking any fond memories away from this rendezvous. Although it had been good to see Rip Giddens and some other old friends, too many bad things had happened. When he thought about this rendezvous, Preacher would always have a sour taste in his mouth. The shot came from somewhere behind him, and Preacher whirled horse around. His eyes scanned the landscape, looking for the telltale powder smoke that would tell him where the rifleman was located. He spotted a gray haze floating above a clump of trees on a hillside about 200 yards away.
You son of a bitch, you won't have time to reload again before I reach you.
The rifleman must have realized that too, because when Preacher reached the trees, he didn't see any sign of the man. The man who had taken those shots at him was running, but that bastard is gonna find out he couldn't run far enough or fast enough to get away from Preacher. Stump figured he should have listened to Luther Snell. Snell had insisted that Preacher wouldn't come after him, but Stump didn't have Snell's confidence. And even though he planned to join up with Snell in the man's latest scheme, Stump wanted to get rid of Preacher first. He would have, too, if that damn horse hadn't chosen the exact wrong second to move. Now Stump was on the run, and he knew that if he didn't get away from Preacher, he was a dead man. Stump kept his horse moving, heading up the hill where he had hidden to take a shot at Preacher. He knew that beyond that hill was a series of rough hogback ridges. If he could reach that rugged terrain, he might have a chance of giving Preacher the slip. It was a slim chance to be sure, but right now Stump would take any chance at all and be glad to get it. After a few more minutes of full-on galloping, Stump reined in and looked around. He was several miles from the valley where the rendezvous had been held now. He reached the first of the ridges where he had hoped to hide from Preacher. After a moment, he plunged into that rugged, desolate terrain. But he no longer thought of it as a place to hide. Now, he told himself it was going to be a good place for a trap. A trap for Preacher. Most of Preacher's senses came into play now as he stalked his quarry. He looked, he listened, he even sniffed the air, searching for the smallest hint that the bushwhacker had passed this way. He was careful not to skyline himself on top of any of the ridges. His path twisted back and forth like a drunken snake.
Find him, dog. Find the Jasper who took those shots at me.
Dog bounded off, nose to the ground. He soon vanished into the desolate terrain, but Preacher knew he would still be close by. In addition to his senses, Preacher also paid close attention to his instincts. His gut told him that he was being watched. Right before his eyes spotted a tiny red flash on the ridge that loomed to his left. He knew it was the rising sun reflecting off metal, and the most likely metal to be up there in those trees was the barrel of a gun. Preacher rolled out of the saddle.
Horse, go!
Preacher knelt behind a boulder and laid the barrel of his rifle on top of it.
He knew where the shot had come from now, so he cocked the rifle and lined his sights on the spot.
Even if he didn't hit the bushwhacker, Preacher figured his shot came close enough to make the bastard duck.
Dog had found the bushwhacker and was introducing himself.
Preacher finished ramming home a fresh charge in the rifle.
He darted out from behind the boulder, and his long legs carried him toward the slope at a dead run.
Preacher started up the ridge, heading for the trees where the rifleman was concealed.
They were about 50 yards away.
The slope was steep enough so that even with Preacher's strength and conditioning, his heart was pounding by the time he got there.
As he came into the trees, Preacher spotted a buckskin-clad figure struggling with Dog.
The big cur had the man's left arm in his mouth and was savaging him. But
the man managed to grope at his belt with his right hand and pulled a big hunting knife.
The blade rose, ready to strike at Dog.
Hey! Dog, back off!
The wolf-like creature obeyed the command, letting go of Stump's arm and backing away. Preacher pulled one of his pistols as he approached the fallen Stump.
Stump, what the hell were you thinking, pot-shotting me that way? You and me always got along all right.
You make fun of me. I never did nothing about it.
Oh, hell, Stump, that didn't mean nothing.
Not to you, maybe. I hated you for it. That's why I went along with Snail. He said we'd get even with you.
What did you do, Stump? What did Snail do?
Him and me and some other fellers called you out of your tent, clouded you over the head. Then Snail and the rest of us went inside to take turns with your squaw. It was Snail. He's the one who started hitting and kicking her. Nobody else really planned on hurting her.
But you stood by and let it happen. And I'll bet some of you even helped him.
I never meant to hurt nobody, but I knew you wouldn't believe that, Preacher. Snail wanted me to come with him and the others and go after those pilgrims. But I had to try to get rid of you first.
What pilgrims are you talking about? Willard Carling and his bunch?
Yeah. Snail said Carling's rich, so we could grab him and make him pay to be let loose.
God damn it, you're saying he means to kidnap Carling?
And the others.
How many men does he have with him?
Dunno, 8 or 10.
I'm sorry about this, Stump, but I gotta leave you here.
Leave me here to die alone, you mean?
You brung it on yourself. Shooting at me was one thing, but missing that many times, that was a real mistake.
Preacher didn't take the time to bury Stump. He hurried back down the hill, called horse and dog to him, and mounted up to head back to the valley where the rendezvous had taken place, moving as fast as he could ride. Unfortunately, Preacher's pursuit of Stump had taken him in the opposite direction from the way Willard Carling's party had traveled when they left the valley. By the time Preacher got back to the site of the encampment, almost everybody was gone. Only a few trappers remained. Carling and the others had long since moved out of sight. They'd be miles away by now. One of the men who hadn't left yet was friends with both Preacher and Rip Giddens. Preacher rode over to the man.
Howdy, Wingate.
Howdy yourself, Preacher. Say, did you hear some shooting a while ago just before you took off like a bat out of hell?
Yeah, those shots were aimed at me. I went after the fellow who fired them.
Luther Snell?
Stump.
Stump? I didn't think that sawed-off little runt would have the gumption to ambush you, Preacher.
Well, Stump was a lot more bitter and angry than any of us realized.
Yeah, I reckon so. You catch up to him?
I did.
Well, then I reckon old Stump won't be coming to any more rendezvous. Too bad. But he had it coming for trying to bushwhack you like that.
That's not all he did. Before he died, he admitted that he'd been with Snell and some others when they attacked Mountain Mist and killed her.
I never did quite believe Snell when he said he didn't have nothing to do with that. You going after him and the others, Preacher?
You're damn right. But that ain't the all of it.
Snell's got his sights set on that bunch of pilgrims. He wants to kidnap that artist fella, Carling, and make him pay a big ransom to get free. Lord knows what he and his pards will do to the rest of the bunch.
You need some help dealing with this?
I figure it's my snake to stomp, but I appreciate the offer, Wingate. When you were talking to Rip over the past few days, did he happen to say where all he planned to take those folks?
They were heading north, toward Baldpate. I don't know for sure where else they were going. Rip said something about Seven Smokes, I think. Oh, yeah, he said they might try to visit old Hairface's band, too.
Now, Hairface was a chief of the Teton Sioux who was reasonably friendly toward white men. The chief had some white blood himself, enough so that a little beard stubble had actually sprouted on his cheeks when he was a young man, giving him his name. The beard never grew enough that it needed to be shaved, just enough to make Hairface stand out from his fellow Sioux.
I'm obliged for the help. Reckon I better get started after Carlin's bunch. I want to catch up to him before Snell and his pards do.
That may be hard. They all got a head start on you.
Yeah, I know that. That's why I gotta make up some ground. So long, Wingate. Yeah!
Rip Giddens was a hard-headed, practical man. Or at least he liked to think of himself that way. But like most men, he did have his superstitious side, too. And as the group that he led rode toward Baldpate, he had a vague sensation somewhere deep within him that things might not work out just as he had planned. The rendezvous they had left early that morning had been an eventful one, but not all of those events had been good. Far from it, in fact. Twisting in his saddle, Rip looked behind him at the riders strung out along the trail. Willard Carling came first, with an eager expression on his face. His head turned ceaselessly from side to side as his eyes darted everywhere, trying to take in everything at once. Carling was nearly always cheerful and enthusiastic, with a friendly smile on his face for everybody. Not much of a man, maybe, but he had a good heart, and he could paint up a storm. His biggest problem was that he usually thought the best of everyone and didn't seem to realize that there was some pretty sorry sons of bitches in the world. Now, that couldn't be said of Jasper Hodge. The journalist had a certain cynicism and world-weariness about him. Just the opposite of Willard Carling, Hodge was probably too quick to think the worst of folks. He complained more than Carling did, too, but not as much as the next rider in line, Carling's sister, Faith. She had made it perfectly clear on numerous occasions that she didn't really want to be here. She'd been perfectly happy back in Boston and had no real desire to visit the frontier, despite her claims of being a poet and seeking inspiration in nature. The only reason she had accompanied her brother to the frontier was because he had insisted that she come along. Rip knew from talking to Carling that he and Faith were orphans, the only ones left in their family. Carling had inherited quite a bit of money from his father, who had been a wealthy banker in Boston, and that windfall had allowed him to pursue his dream of painting without having to worry about working for a living. Faith, though, being a woman, existed mainly on the kindness of her brother, and so she had agreed to come along on the expedition to keep him happy. Carling was generally considerate of other folks, but he seemed to have a blind spot that kept him from seeing that his sister was not happy at all. That left Chester Sinclair, and Rip wasn't quite sure what to make of him. Sinclair was big and strong, but he let people push him around every which way. Carling wasn't necessarily mean to him, but he did order Sinclair around like a slave. Rip understood that if you worked for a fella, you were supposed to do what he told you, but he wasn't sure he would have been able to put up with some of the crap that Sinclair did. And it wasn't just Carling who bossed him. Hodge did too, and Faith was probably the worst of the bunch when it came to taking advantage of Sinclair's accommodating nature. But Rip figured the fella had probably grown up poor, and so he accepted without complaint whatever burdens were heaped on his head by those he considered his betters. The Easterners were followed by Sparrow and the men Rip had hired to come along and help him guide and guard the pilgrims and keep up with their supplies and pack horses. Switchfoot had gotten his name because he was such a good dancer,
He was able to keep his feet moving so fast it was hard for the eye to follow him. Rip didn't know why Hammerhead Jones was called that, unless it was because he had such a hard head. There was nothing distinctive about Ed and Tom Ballinger, except for the fact that they were both tall and extremely skinny. Rip wasn't sure if both of them together weighed as much as he did. But that didn't mean they weren't tough as nails and damn near tireless. They could work all day without seeming to feel it. Rip considered them all good fellas and tough fighters, men who would do to ride the river with. They ought to be able to handle just about anything that might come up. But for some reason, he was still worried. He kept his rifle lying across the saddle in front of him, and his eyes roved constantly on the lookout for any sign of trouble.
All right, let's take a noon in here.
I simply have to get this on canvas.
Well, I was sort of planning on us moving on north all afternoon and getting close to Bald Pate. You can sort of see it there in the distance, but it'll look a heap more impressive when we get closer to it.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm sure this mountain you're talking about will be very majestic, but we're surrounded by such splendor here that I just can't let this opportunity go to waste.
Well, all right. I reckon you're the boss.
Oh, that's right, I am. And we can camp here tonight if we need to, can't we?
It ain't a very good place to camp. There ain't no water. We're sort of out in the open. There's no place to fort up in case of trouble.
Oh, what sort of trouble could there be? A place so lovely could only be inhabited by friendly souls.
Sparrow got started preparing a cold lunch from food she had brought along from the rendezvous, while Chester Sinclair set up an easel and canvas and then got out Carlin's paints and brushes. Faith and Hodge contented themselves by strolling around the meadow looking at the flowers and talking.
Switchfoot, Jones, and you Ballinger, spread out around the meadow with your rifles and keep an eye on things while Carling is painting.
What are you gonna do, Rip?
Thought I'd scout on up the trail a ways. I don't know if Mr. Carling is gonna let us go on today or not, but if he does, I want to be sure where we're going.
Rip rode north, keeping the main range of peaks on his left. Some smaller mountains rose to the right, but the course Rip followed was fairly level. After a while, the trail curved around enough so that he could no longer see the meadow where the rest of the party was stopped. That didn't worry him. He would hear the shooting if any trouble broke out. As he came to a small creek lined with aspens and cottonwoods and clumps of thick brush on its banks, he reined in and frowned. His horse lowered its head to drink, then suddenly jerked back up. The horse realized that something was wrong, too. Rip started to lift his rifle, and then he looked around, even though he didn't know what he was looking for. A young brave hit Rip at full run and launched him off the horse. Rip hit the ground hard and lost his grip on his rifle. The engine lifted a tomahawk, ready to smash it down on Rip's skull. Rip's hand shot up and grabbed the warrior's wrist, stopping the tomahawk as it began its downward stroke. The warrior was smaller and lighter, and he was no match for Rip's greater strength. He rolled across the creek bank and fell into the water. Just then, something crashed into the back of Rip's head. Blackness exploded through his consciousness, and he was carried away into an endless dark void.
What do you think, Chester?
Carlin stepped back a pace and cocked his head to the side as he studied the painting he had been working on. Sinclair knew that Carling wasn't really interested in his opinion. Asking for it was just something Carling did.
I think it looks wonderful, sir.
In truth, the painting really was good. In a relatively few brush strokes, Carling had captured the sweep and variety of colors in the flower-bedecked meadow, and the snow-capped mountains rising in the background added a touch of perspective and majesty to the scene.
It still needs work.
Sinclair turned his head to look at Faith and Jasper Hodge as they walked along together about 100 yards away. Although they were far enough away from everyone else so that their conversation was private, they weren't totally alone. Sinclair spotted one of the men Rip Giddens had hired to come along with them, the one called Hammerhead Jones. He was leaning against a tree trunk at the edge of the meadow, his rifle at his side. Giddens had placed the men at various spots around the meadow to act as sentries. Seeing Jones there, not far from Faith and Hodges, made Sinclair frown. Not for the first time, he wished that Carling had left Faith back in Boston. He'd had no right to subject his sister to the rigors of the frontier. Sinclair was convinced it was dangerous out here, even though they hadn't encountered any sort of real peril so far, only minor annoyances. He was gazing narrow-eyed at Faith and Hodge when movement beyond him caught his eye. Jones must have noticed the same thing, because he suddenly straightened from his casual pose and caught up his rifle as he stared in the same direction Sinclair was looking. Several buckskin-clad figures had emerged from some trees and were coming toward Faith and Hodge. The two of them had their backs to the strangers. A ball of cold fear exploded in Sinclair's stomach as he recognized the men as Injuns. They broke into a run, charging silently toward Faith and Hodge, who were unaware of their danger.
Miss Carling, look out!
Injuns! Run, you damn fools!
Hodge broke into a run, dragging Faith with him. Sinclair dashed over to his horse and reached into a saddlebag where a couple of pistols were kept. He pulled the guns out and spun around again, ready to race to Faith's aid. Chester had only gone a couple of steps when he tripped and fell. Both pistols discharged as he struck the ground. Terror lent wings to the feet of Faith and Hodge. They sprinted across the meadow toward the spot where the horses had been halted. Their pursuers were closing the gap behind them, though. More help was on the way, though. Swiftfoot and the Ballinger brothers were running in from other parts of the meadow. Though shot, the warrior didn't go down. He just clapped a hand to a grazed arm for a second, and then he charged forward again.
Oh my God, savages!
Still gripping the empty pistols tightly, Sinclair ran to meet Faith and Hodge. He wasn't going to let anything happen to Faith if he could prevent it. He would sell his life dearly to protect hers.
Keep running! Hurry! Hurry!
Oh, they hurried all right. They sprinted right past him. Sinclair skidded to a stop, planting his feet and bracing himself for the inevitable assault. One of the warriors lunged out in front of his companions and came straight at Sinclair, his paint-streaked face contorted in hate. The Injun swung the tomahawk in his hand at Sinclair's head. Sinclair ducked, only to discover that was exactly what the Injun wanted him to do. The warrior's knee rode sharply and drove into Sinclair's jaw. The blow staggered Sinclair and sent him falling to one knee. The tomahawk whipped at his head again, but this time the blow was no feint. It was intended to crush his skull and dash his brains out. Sinclair jerked up the pistol in his left hand and felt the impact shiver up his arm as he blocked the tomahawk with the barrel of the gun. At the same time, he rammed the barrel of the other pistol into the Indian's belly as hard as he could. Sinclair swung the left-hand gun against his head. Sinclair started to rise to his feet, but one of the other warriors tackled him before he had a chance to strike. The Injun crouched on top of him, tomahawk poised to sweep down and end Sinclair's life. Sinclair realized it had been Ballinger's shot that had saved his life. To his horror, he wasn't able to repay the favor. One of the remaining warriors leaped at Ballinger, whirling his tomahawk, and with a ghastly thud, it crashed against Ballinger's head. He went down, blood streaming from the wound. Sinclair threw himself at the warrior who had just struck down one of the brothers. The Injun tried to whirl to meet this new threat, but he wasn't in time to stop a pistol from crashing against his skull. Stumbling a little, Sinclair turned to see what was going on. The other Ballinger brother was down, and Sinclair's stunned eyes saw more of the painted figures in buckskin emerging from the woods. Six, eight, no more than that. A veritable horde of savages sweeping down on the hapless party of whites. Sinclair jerked his head around, trying to locate Faith. He spotted her near the horses. Switchfoot and Hammerhead Jones had retreated too and were grabbing the reins of the pack horses. They wanted to get out of here, and Sinclair didn't blame them.
Run! Take Miss Carling and go! I'll hold off the Indians!
Sinclair tried to get up, but the savages surrounded him and rained blows down on him, pinned down by the weight of several warriors. All he could do was lay there and take it. Time passed. Sinclair had no idea how much time had gone by before he was finally lifted to his feet by his captors. He felt like sobbing as he saw that the others had been taken prisoner, too. Even the Ballinger brother who had been wounded. The man wasn't dead, though, Sinclair saw to his surprise. All of the whites were still alive, just helpless prisoners of these savages. The four guides were bloody and battered from the fight. Faith, Carling, and Hodge appeared to be on the verge of hysterics. Sinclair hoped she would control the reaction. She didn't want to do anything that would provoke their captors even more. Several more engines came up, dragging someone with them. Sinclair wasn't too surprised when this unconscious prisoner was dumped on the ground, and he saw that it was Rip Giddens. They must have jumped Giddens first while he was out scouting, then backtracked him here to the meta. The engines gathered up all the horses. The still senseless Giddens was tossed roughly over the back of one of the horses. The prisoners were grouped together and prodded into motion. Sinclair had no idea where the engines were taking them, but he supposed they ought to be grateful that they hadn't all been murdered outright. Survival was up to them now. No one was going to come to help them. He wished Giddens had gotten some more men to come with him, maybe even that ruffian Preacher. But Preacher was doubtless miles away by now, not giving him another thought. One thing was certain. If the savages tried to hurt Faith Carling, they would have to come through him first. He would die before he'd let them harm her. Of course, that might be exactly what they had in mind. Horse responded gallantly anytime Preacher asked him for his best efforts, and today was no exception. Preacher kept moving at a fast pace all morning as he tried to cut the gap between himself and the two groups he was after. He would catch up with Snell and the other men who were bent on kidnapping Willard Carling first. And as he rode, Preacher asked himself whether he wanted to try to deal with him right away or get around him without knowing it and hurry on down to warn Rip Giddens and the Easterners that they were in danger. 10 or 12 to 1 odds that he would face if he took on Snell's bunch didn't bother him all that much. He had faced higher odds in battle before and come through it all right. But anything could happen in a fight. And if he jumped Snell and the other men first and they got lucky enough to kill him, and no one would be left to warn Rip. Somewhat reluctantly, Preacher decided that the best thing to do would be to avoid Snell's gang and try to catch up to the group of pilgrims. In order to do that, and to save himself some time, he figured to take some shortcuts that he knew of. Rip probably knew about them too, but he wouldn't take inexperienced travelers over any of the trails Preacher had in mind. The trails were too rough for that. If Rip was headed first for Baldpate, as Wingate had said, then he would follow the nice, easy route that curved along north at the foot of the mountains. Snell would probably take the same trail, since he didn't know anyone was aware of his plans and wouldn't be in any particular hurry to catch up. So Preacher took to the high country, sending horse up slopes that most mounts wouldn't have been able to negotiate. The rangy horse was almost as nimble as a mountain goat, though Preacher pointed horse in the right direction and let him pick the best path. Dog bounded along from rock to rock behind him. They climbed steadily, but angled northward at the same time. Midday found them on a narrow, twisting ledge that followed the face of a cliff. Preacher's left shoulder almost brushed the sheer stone wall beside him, while his right foot in the stirrup hung over a drop of several hundred feet. It was enough to make a man a mite nervous, and he would have been if he hadn't been on the sure-footed horse. Eventually, the ledge led back down to lower ground, but they were still hundreds of feet higher than the trail down below. Preacher dismounted on a boulder-littered shoulder to let horse have a breather. He took his rifle and went over to the edge of the slope. Jagged juts of rock rose and fell below him, sweeping all the way down to the valley between the mountain ranges. Preacher stiffened. He judged the gunshots came from several miles to the north.
Damn! Did Snell already catch up to them Easterners?
Preacher was about to whirl around and hurry back, even though he had intended to give horse more time to rest. But as he turned, movement caught his eye, and he stopped to peer down into the valley. A good half mile away, and several hundred feet below him, riders had come into view, also heading north. They were sort of bunched up, but Preacher thought there was about a dozen of them. He went over to horse and dug a spyglass out of his saddlebags. Returning to the edge of the shoulder, he dropped to a knee behind a boulder and opened the spyglass. He rested the thin tube on the rock and put his eye to the end of it. The spyglass was powerful enough so that the faces of the riders below seemed to spring up at him. He recognized the ugly, bearded features of Luther Snell right away. Preacher's eyes went from face to face as he noted the identities of the men riding with Snell.
Damnation. Euchre, Hardcastle, Vickery, Admiral Patch Dimmock, Collins, Mitchell, Single Tree, and Baldy.
Preacher knew each and every one of them, and what he knew about them wasn't good. Euchre, Hardcastle, and the Dimmocks, who were cousins, not brothers, had been partners with Snell for a long time, and they weren't any better than he was. Vickery, Collins, and Mitchum had been friends of Stump, and probably wondered why the little trapper hadn't joined the group. Singletree and Baldy were loners, but they were willing to throw in with other fellows if the pickings were good enough. All of them worked as trappers, but all of them had unsavory reputations and were said to have been in trouble with the law before coming west to the mountains. After a moment, Preacher stood up and went back to horse, staying low so there wouldn't be any chance of Snell or the others spotting him. He stowed the spyglass away and then led horse as far back on the shoulder of rugged ground as he could. Preacher was careful not to let himself be spied by the group of men riding on the trail below. He moved as fast as he could and still be cautious. Gradually, he worked his way down out of the mountains, and when he came out on the level ground at their base, he looked back to the south and saw no sign of Snell and the others. He was far enough ahead of them now that he didn't have to worry about them spotting him. Preacher turned horse to the north and heeled him into a ground-eating trot. The dog ranged ahead, flushing out ground squirrels and birds. Preacher entered a broad meadow covered with wildflowers, and something out of place caught his eye. Things were scattered around in the middle of the meadow. He couldn't tell what they were at first, but as he came closer, he recognized the rectangles as Willard Carling's canvases. Some were blank, but others had work in progress on them, including the portrait of Preacher that Carling had started back at the rendezvous. From the looks of the canvases, somebody had just tossed them around haphazardly. Jars of paint were scattered across the ground, too. Some of them broken, but most of them intact. Brushes had been thrown down as well.
Horse, I know goddamn good and well that Carling never treated his supplies like that. And neither would anybody else in that party. The way these canvases have been thrown around like they was worthless makes me think that the Injuns might be to blame for whatever happened here.
Preacher glanced toward the south.
Snell and the rest of those money-hungry bastards are coming up behind us, and up ahead somewhere there's a band of Injuns on the war path. Hard to believe that old Hairface's bunch would do a thing like this. The Teton Sioux have always been friendly to whites, at least compared to the Crow and the Blackfoot. Come on, dog. It ain't really our problem, but I also ain't the sort of man to turn my back on folks in trouble. We'll see what we can do to help them pilgrims. Yeah!
Besides, Rip was his friend, and to a lesser extent, so were Switchfoot, Jones, and the Ballingers. If the Injuns had killed any of them, Preacher was not going to be happy.
What are they going to do to us?
Faith stumbled along between her brother and Jasper Hodge. From time to time, one of the men had to reach out and grasp her arm to steady her. Chester Sinclair came along behind him, still unsteady on his feet.
Oh, I think this is all just a misunderstanding. We mean these people no harm, and they have no reason to harm us.
They don't need a reason. They're savages. They scalp and kill white men just for the fun of it.
The savages surrounded them, trotting along tirelessly and not allowing the prisoners to slow down either. Faith wished she could ride, but the Indians weren't allowing any of the prisoners to get near the horses.
We're stopping. Oh, thank God. They're going to let us rest at last.
I don't think that's all they have in mind.
Faith looked around again, and she saw one of the red brutes stalking straight toward her, a grin on his ugly face. He stopped in front of her and reached up to touch her hair. The look in his eyes was unmistakably one of lust. Faith fainted dead away. Listen. Less than half an hour after her swoon, Faith regained her senses. Her eyelids fluttered open, and she stared up at Sinclair in shock.
What's going on? Chester, why are you carrying me?
You fainted, dear. Passed out cold.
That Indian. That awful Indian. Did he?
None of them touched you. You're safe.
But you're carrying me, Chester.
They made us keep moving. I had no choice. I certainly meant no disrespect, Miss Faith.
Their head man acted like he was going to kill you if we didn't bring you along.
Then you saved my life.
I just did what I thought best.
You can put me down now.
Excuse me?
I said you can put me down. If I'm not injured, then I'm perfectly capable of walking. It's hardly proper for you to be carrying me like this, Chester. My God, you're like a bridegroom carrying his bride over the threshold. Besides, it's not fair to make you carry me. You were badly beaten by those savages.
I'm fine.
No, you're not. Now put me down.
Sinclair had no choice but to stop for a second and lower her so that her feet were on the ground again. One of the engines brandished a tomahawk at him.
Move!
Faith began to walk alongside the other prisoners.
Where are we?
Still going north, toward that mountain up there, the one that Mr. Giddens told us about.
It was as if Rip knew they were talking about him. He lifted his head to look around. He was still slung over the back of one of the horses. Now that he was conscious again, the engines halted briefly and dragged him off the animal, dumping him unceremoniously on the ground.
Get up now! Move!
I'm getting up. I'm getting up. Keep your shirt on, Badger.
You know this man?
His name is Bites Like a Badger. Most folks just call him Badger. He's the sub-chief of the Teton Sioux.
Fool! Hairface is dead. He took sick and died of fever 1 month ago. I am the chief now, Whiteface.
Well, shit.
This Hairface, you said he was a friendly Indian?
Yep, and Badger ain't.
Then he and his people, they're our enemies now?
You could say that. Even among the tribes that get along with us pretty well, there are always some hotheads who want war with the whites. Hairface always kept that bunch under control in his band. Badger here ain't near as sympathetic to us. He'll let the ones who hate whites do pretty much whatever they want.
They're going to kill us, aren't they? They're going to take us back to their town or village or whatever you call it, and they're going to torture us and kill us.
I reckon that's what they have in mind, all right, miss. Unless we can get away from them somehow. I doubt if any of us will live to see the sun come up tomorrow.
What the hell happened here?
Luther Snell looked around the meadow at the scattered canvases, paints, and brushes.
That prissy little bastard wouldn't have left all this painting gear behind.
There's blood on the grass over here.
Snell stalked over to join Singletree and looking down at the dark stains.
Must have been Injuns, the way those paintings are slung around. They wouldn't have had no interest in such like. Injuns don't like paintings to start with. Some of them think you steal a man's soul if you paint his picture.
Snell stared hard at Patch Dimmock, the man who had just spoken.
Of all the damn bad luck, we go after Carlin to make ourselves rich, and a bunch of stinking red heathens carry him off.
How do you know they didn't kill him?
Baldy was older than the others, a lanky man who had been in these mountains for more than 20 years, and some said that the decades of isolation had left him touched in the head. Snell knew that Baldy might seem a little slow sometimes, but he was still pretty cunning.
There's blood, but no bodies. If the Injuns had killed Carlin or any of the rest of that bunch, they'd have left the bodies.
Yeah, that's right. They've taken them prisoner, sure as hell.
What are we gonna do now?
Go after them and get Carlin back.
Well, I ain't so sure if I want to get mixed up in that, Snell. I agreed to come along with you mainly because Stump did, and if you look around, you'll see Stump ain't here. And I sure as hell didn't sign on to do no Injun fighting.
Look, Vickery, I don't know what happened to Stump. We waited for him as long as we could, but he didn't show up. Now, maybe he's coming along behind us and we'll catch up before the day's over.
Yeah, and maybe you decided it was a mistake throwing in with you, especially after what happened to the Injun woman of Preachers.
We all agreed not to say no more about that.
Well, whether we talk about it or not don't have nothing to do with whether or not it happened. We know it did, Preacher knows it did, and sooner or later he's going to come after us, whether he's got any proof or not. You don't know Preacher like I do, Snell, and you ain't answered what I said about having to fight Injuns.
Damn it, ain't you ever had to fight those Red Devils before? Why are you making such a fuss about it now?
I never went out of my way to fight them, and I ain't gonna do it now either. I'm done, Snell. I got better things to do than throw my life away on some crazy scheme of yours.
Snell knew he couldn't let Vickery take off by his lonesome. That might start an exodus among the group. And before he knew it, he'd be alone. And he didn't want that.
So, you figure you're a match for Preacher, do you?
What do you mean by that?
I mean you're riding off alone. When Preacher comes to settle a score with you for that squaw of his, you'll have to deal with him by yourself.
Well, you said he couldn't do anything because he didn't have any proof.
And you just said that he would, whether he had proof or not. Make up your goddamn mind, Vickery. And while you're doing that, think about this. If Preacher does hunt you down, how would you rather meet him? Alone or with a bunch of good men backing you up?
There's an old saying about hanging together or hanging separately. Even though it's doubtful any of us would ever hang for what we did, sentiment still applies here.
Collins was the educated one in the bunch, so Snell was glad that he had spoken up.
I reckon you're right, Collins. And you too, Snell. I may not like it, but we're sort of all in this together, ain't we?
Damn right we are, all 10 of us. We're gonna get Carlin back from those Injuns and make him promise to pay us a heap of money if we get him back to civilization safe and sound. He'll do it, too, if he knows what's good for him. And then we can afford to do anything else we want to. We can split up and never come back to these mountains, and Preacher will never find us. That's the way to deal with Preacher.
I'd rather kill him.
If he comes after us, that's sure as hell exactly what we'll do. Now mount up, boys. We got us some Injuns to catch.
To Preacher's keen eyes, the trail left by the Injuns and their captives was fairly easy to follow. The Injuns probably didn't know that anyone was after them, so they didn't hurry or try to conceal the signs they left behind. The group moved steadily toward Bald Pate. By late afternoon, Preacher figured he was closing in on them. Once again, he angled horse into the foothills along the base of the mountain range. He couldn't just ride up behind the Injuns. They would see him coming if he tried to do that. He had to approach in a more stealthy fashion, preferably after night had fallen. Preacher glanced at the sky and saw that the sun was lowering toward the peaks in the west. He figured there was another hour or so of daylight left. He couldn't stop now, not when he was this close to catching up.
I know you're getting tired, Hoss, but you'll get a chance to rest after a while.
From the top of the wooded hill, he spotted his quarry a short time later. The Injuns had brought along all the horses they had captured, but no one was riding them. The prisoners were being forced to walk. Preacher made a quick count of the captives, even though that was somewhat difficult to do because the warriors had surrounded them to make sure none of them tried to escape. Preacher came up with 10, and he felt relief go through him. 4 Easterners, Rip Giddens, and the 4 men he had hired, plus Sparrow, made 10. Just as he had thought, nobody had been killed during the fight, but several of the captives were stumbling along as though they were hurt. Preacher moved the spyglass and studied the warriors who had seized the pilgrims and their guides. From the decorations on their buckskins and the markings on their faces, he identified them as Teton Sioux. A frown creased his forehead. It looked like he'd been wrong about Hairface after all. Maybe something had happened to turn the normally friendly chief against the whites. Then he looked at the warrior who was striding out in front of the others, and his jaw tightened in recognition. The leader of this war party was not Hairface.
Son of a bitch. Bites like a badger.
Preacher had had run-ins with Badger before. Badger didn't like him, and the feeling was pretty damn mutual. The sub-chief and a few young bucks had once jumped Preacher while he was running his trap lines. Shots had been traded. A ball from Preacher's rifle had burned a scar across Badger's cheek and taken off a tiny bit of his ear. Seeing Badger in charge of this war party told Preacher several things right off. Since Badger had been Hairface's primary sub-chief, it told Preacher that something must have happened to Hairface. Badger was running things now, and that didn't bode well for the trappers who made their livings in these mountains.
Come on, Hoss. We still got a ways to go.
Keeping to the high ground, Preacher rode on toward Bald Pate, which loomed larger and larger to his left. He knew that the Indians wouldn't be able to reach their village before darkness fell. They would have to stop and make camp for the night, and then travel on to their village the next day. As the ball of the sun began to dip below the mountains a while later, Preacher was hidden in a thick stand of trees about 500 yards from the spot where the Indians had stopped, beside a small stream. They would spend the night here, where there was fresh water. Unfortunately, there weren't many trees around the spot they had chosen for their campsite, so Preacher wouldn't have much cover as he approached. Dog sat beside him as he studied the terrain between his position and the place where the Tetons and their prisoners had stopped for the night.
Yeah, Dog, I know it. I'm as anxious to get among them savages and raise some hell as you are, fella. But getting those pilgrims out of there safe and sound has to come first.
The prisoners slumped to the ground exhausted as soon as their captors allowed them to.
When are they going to kill us?
Well, I might have been wrong about us being dead by morning. From the looks of things, they don't plan on killing us tonight. They're taking us back to their village. Whatever they do to us, that's where they'll do it, so the whole band can see what's happening.
In other words, they want to entertain their women and children with our horrible deaths.
We ain't there yet. There's no telling what might happen before we get there.
But there's no one to help us. Absolutely no one.
The prisoners sat huddled together. Half a dozen warriors stood around them, guarding them. Faith had no doubt that if she or any of the others tried to get away, they would be killed mercilessly. The badly wounded Ballinger was lying down with his gory head in his brother's lap. That terrible wound in his scalp had been bleeding from time to time all day, and the poor man seemed to be out of his senses.
Ed, damn it, don't you die!
Ed's brother leaned over and gripped the injured man by the shoulders. More blood welled from the wound. Faith had to look away, unable to stand the terrible sight any longer.
There's nothing you can do for him, Tom. His skull's probably all busted up from being hit with that tomahawk.
But he can't die. He just can't.
Tom, he's gone.
God damn injured scum. I'm gonna tear their skin from their body.
Might as well lay him down, Tom. Maybe the Injuns will let us bury him.
Tom Ballinger sprang to his feet and lunged at the nearest of the Injuns, his hands hooked in front of him like claws, ready to rend and tear whatever he could get a hold of.
Shit! Somebody stop him!
The Injun had already raised his tomahawk and was ready to dash Ballinger's brains out, but he lowered the weapon as Sinclair leapt on Ballinger and held him down.
Good job, Sinclair. I reckon you saved his life.
Maybe, but saved him for what?
Stay here, Dog. But you be ready if I call, hear?
Preacher left his rifle behind. If he had to do any fighting in the Injun camp, it was going to be close work, the kind of killing best done with pistols or a knife. Preacher moved toward the camp, crouching low and taking his time about it. When he was still about 300 yards away, he dropped to his belly and began crawling through the buffalo grass. When Preacher judged that he was close, he lifted his head. He could see dark shapes sprawled on the ground. Exhaustion had claimed the prisoners. Most of the warriors were asleep too, but he spotted faint movement in the shadow cast by a tree on the creek bank. The sentry was there, unable to remain completely motionless during the long hours of the night. Preacher lowered his head and began crawling again. He circled wide so that he could get behind the Injun who was standing guard. When he was close enough, Preacher drew his knife from its sheath and then rose to his feet. Quietly and carefully, Preacher lowered the corpse to the ground. He dropped back to the ground and eased forward on his belly, moving only a few inches at a time, stopping often to make sure the Injuns were still sleeping. The moon had not risen yet, but the starlight was strong enough so that he was able to make out which of the dark shapes on the ground belonged to Rip Giddens. Rip was bigger than anyone else in the party, even Chester Sinclair. Preacher eased up alongside the sleeping man. He put his hand over Rip's mouth and brought it down quickly, shutting off the big frontiersman's air.
It's Preacher. Don't move just yet.
Rip gave a minuscule nod to show that he understood. Preacher took his hand away from Rip's mouth.
Got any help?
No, it's just me. Wake up the other fellas, but be as quiet as you can about it. I'll rouse the pilgrims. We're gonna crawl out of here.
Rip nodded again. He rolled slowly onto his side, then on over so that he lay on his belly like Preacher. They went in different directions, crawling toward the other sleeping forms. Instinct made Preacher head for Sinclair first. If all hell broke loose, he wanted Sinclair awake and aware of what was going on so the man could take part in the fight. He followed the same procedure he had employed with Rip Giddens, crawling up next to Sinclair and then getting ready to clamp a hand over his mouth.
You won't kill me in my sleep, you damn red savage!
Instantly, the whole camp was aroused, the warriors springing to their feet.
Run! Rip, get everybody the hell out of here!
Rip and the other three frontiersmen leaped up and joined Preacher in the fray, fighting desperately with their bare hands as they grappled with their captors. Someone leaped onto Preacher's back and knocked him forward onto his knees. Preacher dropped the guns and reached up and back to tangle the fingers of both hands in the warrior's long hair. Preacher flipped the engine over in the air and he came crashing down on his back. Preacher was on him in an instant. Preacher backed away from the group of engines, and as he did so, he realized that Rip and the others were closing ranks too, all of them coming together around the four pilgrims from Boston. Unfortunately, even with the damage they had done, they were still heavily outnumbered. The war party had at least 30 men in it, and although several of them were down, injured or worse, more than 20 warriors still surrounded the five frontiersmen. The only weapon the defenders had amongst them was Preacher's knife.
Sorry, Preacher! I don't know how you come to follow us. I reckon you should have stayed somewhere else.
Preacher!
Badger stepped forward, tomahawk clutched in his hand, and in the starlight, Preacher recognized his ugly features.
Bites like a badger! Yeah! It's me, all right, Badger! Didn't figure on seeing me again, did ya?
I hoped that I would. I prayed to the Great Spirit that I would have another chance to kill you, white man.
Well, here I am, you son of a whore. Come on if you feel lucky.
Not here! Not now! But when we return to the village of my people, so that all may see!
Yeah! Problem is, I ain't going to the village of your people, and neither are those folks. They don't mean you no harm, so you're gonna let them go.
Take them! Now! No! Do not kill Preacher!
Die, you filthy savage!
Sinclair leapt into the middle of the warriors and began flailing his fist at him and mouth-like blows. Preacher, Rip, and the other frontiersmen were right behind him, carrying the attack to their would-be captors. That move took the engines a little by surprise, but its effectiveness vanished swiftly as they were overwhelmed by the sheer weight of numbers that the warriors had on their side. A tomahawk knocked the knife out of Preacher's hand. Then fully a half dozen of the Tetons piled on top of Preacher, grabbing him and forcing him to the ground. One by one, the other men were pinned down as well.
Tie them all. Make sure Preacher especially cannot move.
Within minutes, Preacher was hog-tied. The bonds were so tight that he couldn't even wiggle his fingers, let alone have any hope of getting free. The other prisoners were tied up as well, even Sparrow.
Now we see what your brave words amount to, Preacher. Nothing! You are my prisoner, and soon my people will see you die!
Luther Snell fidgeted tensely as he waited for Baldy to come back from scouting up ahead. Snell had heard the shots maybe half a mile away, but he didn't know what was happening. Maybe the engines had nabbed Baldy. Maybe the old bastard had told the savages about Snell and the others, and any minute the murdering red heathens would fall on him and wipe him out. But then, Baldy came trotting out of the shadows.
Don't shoot! It's me!
What'd you find out, you crazy old coot?
You call me crazy old coot, but who was it you sent slipping up on them engines to see what they was doing? Who was it, huh, Luther?
Just tell me what you found out, Baldy.
Sure. There was a fight.
We know that. We heard the shots and the yelling.
I crawled up close enough to hear what's going on. Nobody knew I was there. Not the engines, not them prisoners, not even Preacher. preacher.
Preacher?
Hell yeah, preacher. Best I could tell, he slipped in there and tried to get those pilgrims loose. But the Injuns woke up, and there was a fight. And when it was over, they nabbed preacher too. Had him all trussed up like a pig going to market.
God damn. I didn't figure on preacher getting mixed up in this.
You should not have to worry about him. Badger's the leader of that war party, and he hates preacher. Just give old Badger time, and he'll kill preacher for us.
You may be on to something there, old-timer.
So what are we going to do?
Well, Vickery, we're going to follow that war party and bide our time. We'll let those Injuns do our work for us and get rid of preacher. Then, when the time is right, we'll carry out the same plan we had before, to get Willard Carlin in our hands and force him to pay us. We're still going to be rich men. Nothing's changed. Except that preacher's going to be dead.
Six Injun braves stood guard around Preacher and the other captives. They eyed them closely, but they didn't seem to mind their talking with each other.
Why'd you follow us, Preacher?
Somebody took a shot at me this morning, a while after y'all had pulled out.
Who'd be damn fool enough to do that?
Stump.
Stump?
What the hell did he want to do that for? He's always been a testy little bastard, but I didn't think he was crazy.
Yeah, well, he was afraid I'd find out that he was part of the bunch who attacked and killed Mountain Mist. He thought I'd come after him and settle the score, so he tried to get rid of me first.
Lord, I didn't think Stump would do a thing like that either.
I heard it from his own lips. He said it was Luther Snell's idea to rape Mountain Mist. I don't figure any of the others planned to kill her, though. That was mostly Snell's doing. But the others sure as hell didn't try to stop him.
Stump told you all this while he was dying?
Oh, yeah. At least he had the decency to say he was sorry before he passed over the divide.
Being sorry don't bring that poor girl back. Or change the fact they tried to kill you.
Hell no, it don't.
That still don't explain why you followed us.
Because Stump told me something else. He said Snell had another idea. Him and the other fellows who'd been with him were going to trail you and these pilgrims, and then jump you and kidnap Mr. Carling so they could hold him for ransom.
They were going to kidnap me?
That's right. They figured on making you pay him a bunch of money to let you go.
But I don't have scads of money. Not on me, anyway.
They would have taken you back to St. Louis, I reckon, and made you send a letter to your bank in Boston. They would have kept you locked up somewhere until you got a letter of credit back and withdrew the money from a bank in St. Louis. Then they would have killed you so you couldn't tell anybody what they'd done.
What about the rest of us?
Oh, you would have been dead a long time before that.
My God, it's hard to believe that anyone could be so barbaric.
Was Stump supposed to be a part of that, too?
Yeah, but he wanted to get rid of me first. Didn't work out that way.
What happens now?
Well, Sinclair, they say they're taking us to their village. Tied up like we are, I don't see any way we can stop them from doing it.
And then they'll kill us.
That'd be what they got in mind, I reckon.
Oh, this is all my fault. If I hadn't shouted and woke them up when you were trying to free us, none of this would have happened.
Well, you don't know that. Something else could have gone wrong. The odds of getting away were against us to start with.
Miss Faith is gonna die, and it's my fault. Let her go, you damn dirty savage! Let the woman go!
Sinclair! Sinclair, stop it!
Do you hear me, heathens? Let her go!
Several of the Injuns leaped up and rushed over, Badger amongst them. Preacher couldn't do anything to stop it as the chief drew back his foot and unleashed a kick that smashed into Sinclair's face.
Keep him quiet or I will cut his tongue out.
But it's like a badger's a real brave man when his enemies are tied up.
Remember what I said, preacher.
The next morning, the Injuns rose early and ate breakfast. But again, they didn't feed the prisoners. Faye started into crying as soon as she woke up. Carling hitched himself over beside her.
Don't worry, dear. I'm sure everything is going to be all right.
No, it won't. They're going to kill us all, and there's nothing we can do to stop them. And I can't feel my hands and feet anymore.
I don't imagine any of us can. We're all tied tightly.
I'm sorry, miss. It's my fault.
Oh, shut up. Whining about whose fault it is won't change anything.
Sinclair looked hurt by her sharp words. Just then, Bites Like a Badger approached Faith with a knife in his hand.
What are you doing? No! Get away! No! Oh!
She tried to scoot away from him, but was unable to move. With a look of pure disdain, Badger stooped and used the knife to cut the bonds around Faith's ankles. Badger went around the group, cutting the bonds on everyone's ankles.
Now we go.
Badger turned and stalked away. The prisoners were hauled upright roughly and prodded into motion. Surrounded by their captors, they stumbled forward, weak from exhaustion and hunger. Most of them worried about what was going to happen next. Around midday, the group reached the spot where Preacher expected to find the Teton Sioux village. This large open plain next to a twisting, fast-flowing stream is where the Tetons had their lodges when Hairface was the chief of this band. But now, the village was gone. Badger kept his warriors and their prisoners moving as they headed east. They were going toward the Valley of the Seven Smokes.
Hey, Badger, what happened? Did you move the village after Hairface died?
Badger stopped and swung around to glare at Preacher.
Hairface was not the only one killed by the fever. Several others in the village died as well. It was decided by the elders that this had become an evil place, and that the people should leave it and seek out a new home. I had a vision in which a badger, my spirit animal, came to me and led me to the Valley of the Seven Smokes. So that is where the people went, and where they live now.
Oh, hell's fire. We was heading there. You mean we would have run into this bunch even if they hadn't jumped us?
Sounds like it. This expedition was a mite cursed to start with.
I wish now we'd never come. I just wanted to paint the wilderness and the savages who live here. Now it doesn't seem worth it.
Not worth our lives. Imagine that.
I didn't know this was going to happen, Faith. I certainly didn't set out to be captured and mistreated and ultimately killed by heathens.
Now nobody's dead yet except poor Ed Ballinger. There's no point in giving up.
It's hopeless, and you know it, Preacher.
I don't know nothing of the sort, Hodge. Hell, if folks were that quick to give up, there wouldn't even be a country here today.